There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, it's your old pal Wilson, and we're bringing you the 12 Days of Richmas. Yeah, we went there. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. These are the 12 most listened to episodes of 2023. Enjoy. Hey, Stinks.
Wilson.
What's been going on, man? What calamity has befallen you since the last time I spoke to you, man?
I'm pretty calamity-free these days. I think I got it all out of my system over the between 2020 and 2022. I got all the... how you say Job-like disasters out of the way. People stopped dying. I stopped getting letters from state governments like, you owe us money because you committed fraud. And listen, I'm not a geezer like you, Rich. I'm not used to the word fraud being thrown around willy-nilly like confetti. So it was just insane. And so now I got a cat and a girlfriend and live near a canyon, and sort of things are a bit more calm. I was in New Brunswick 2 days ago, and now I'm in California. Then I'm going to England. You know what I'm saying? Just mostly living in an airport, like a fool.
Mate, well, I'm glad you're alive and bits are still stuck to your body. You still have your limbs.
I mean, yeah.
Because last time I spoke to you, they were rebuilding you like RoboCop.
Well, listen, I mean, I got to tell you, that's what it feels like. I wish I had gotten more superpowers. By the way, if I knew I would this much metal in your body would lead to you not being a cyborg, because I got a metal shoulder, I got two metal elbows, and still I don't get the sweet information like Terminator 2.
Go on.
I was going to say, there's certain technology I feel like we really needed to concentrate on. And when they said the Google Glass was coming out, I thought we were going to get the Terminator 2, like, scan, get all the information, be able to, like, see someone's, like, clothing measurements, stuff like that. But instead, we just have the ability to order a cab with our phone.
maybe what they've done with you, maybe you're a test subject. And what they're doing is just putting in the framework slowly. They're like, this guy's going to do it again. So so what we'll do, we'll do these bits and we'll do that bit. And then he's going to do it again. Or maybe we'll orchestrate it so it happens again.
I mean, this does sound like a government program. I got to tell you, because it has the lack of thought, especially British government. Like, here's what we'll do. We'll find a guy who's a bit of an idiot, who falls down a lot, and we'll try out our robot technology on him. It'll just rely on he has to keep falling down. They're like, why wouldn't you just tell someone and they could just volunteer a subject? We're the British government. 200 years ago, we had an empire for a bit, so don't fuck with us, okay? Yeah, we fucking... People, our great-grandparents actually knew how to do this, so we're just as smart. That's sort of what it's like.
It says that you're Mr. Bean, crossed with RoboCop. It's exactly. More like...
Yeah, a Robo-Bean. Did you like Mr. Bean growing up, or was it just on? This is a thing I was thinking about recently, because I was on an airplane and they had it as like people are getting on. It was just sort of playing on the little screen. And I remember growing up loving Mr. Bean and then watching it. I was like, this is what it was? Because I hadn't seen it in 30 years. I was like, I don't remember this being like, I remember it being amazing. And I was
hilarious.
When's the last time you watched it though?
No, but what I mean is growing up, it was hilarious.
Oh yeah.
Like,
okay.
But then, like you say, it's 30 years ago, and we were a lot more innocent back then, you know? Way back. This is before, you know, Bin Laden did what he did. He did the epic Hollywood fuck you to the world. So before that, we were kind of like, yeah, man, this is this guy bumbling around. He doesn't have any friends. He's a bit rude.
I do find this fascinating that we all act like 9/11 was the end of innocence in the world. You live in the UK, Rich. Shit was fucked up for like 100 years before that. Like, and by the way, Canada and the US too, but this is a thing we all were like, and then that Osama had to ruin our picnic. And it was like, we're all fucked up anyway. And it was like, yeah, but we got someone to blame now.
Yeah. No, but like I said, I think we said this before, it was because of what he did. It wasn't just like, because they were always, you know, human beings have been at war since forever, since they divided into two tribes and just went, hang on a minute, what the fuck's their problem? You know, it was way back.
Whoa,
when.
Where'd you get the fucking stick? He's like, I'm not gonna fucking tell you. That's not fucking fair. Yeah. Oh,
so quickly. We want some of your beans. We're not having any of our beans. And then
we've been in green rooms and watched comedians almost fight over jokes that were bad.
Yeah. Mediocrity.
I watched two guys, and bear in mind, it was in 2013. So the reference point is 2 years old. Two guys in a green room in England got into a screaming match over who got to do a joke about Rebecca Brooks. It was 2 years after it was topical. It was in 2013. It was.
This goes to show you, man.
I'll tell you where it was. And this is a podcast vaguely about mental health. And this is a place where most comedians gain some mental health problems. And that was, do you remember I knew it as the highlight in Watford, the highlight, and then it went back to the Junglers. Do you remember that one that was briefly in that square where there was a Junglers across the street from another Junglers, or like a highlight across from the Junglers that was then briefly ran by that guy Ian, who had an agency in Essex, and it was called The Comedy Club.
Ian Franklin, who was my former agent.
He offered me as well, but I said, all right, cool, let's meet in London. He was like, I don't go into London. And I was like, all right, I'm not siding with a guy. I haven't moved to London to not have a agent who doesn't live in London. That to say, that venue is where that debate took place, and that was one of the weirdest places to perform comedy. Like, just so much angry alcoholic energy.
Yeah, and when you look outside, it was just carnage. And that would have been in, like, I've been there in different seasons, and every season it was the same people out the front, all dressed the same, regardless of the season.
I have to tell you, it's an interesting thing that has, I think, contributed both positives and negatives to my life, but the British need to get violently intoxicated 2 days a week, like, and regular intoxicated the rest of the week has such an affect. If you're not, like, I wasn't aware of how bad it was, and I also wasn't prepared that it just never ends. And it's this weird thing of, and I lived there for long enough that I keep expecting it to be like that in America where I live now, and it never is. Like, ever are they at that like, I was in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and we're talking like people are ordering bourbon by the barrel. One woman was like, she just kept interrupting because she was too drunk, but it was like, it wasn't threatening. And I remember walking off stage being like, if this was in England, there would have been security on the stage because the entire audience would have been as drunk as this woman. And it helps my brain, truly. I was like, man, the effects of alcohol on a society are crazy. Like if you just think about like how, like Christmas time, how hectic it gets, because you're obligated to go to like 800 intense drinks.
Yeah. It's because you have guns. It's because if we had guns, people would be a bit more reticent to get involved.
I disagree, and here's why. If everyone had the level of guns if it was culturally the way it is in America, because here's the weird thing about America is they've sort of in their brain, they're secretly, they have them because they're giant metal penises that they can shoot bullets at, and that makes
sense. Yes, absolutely.
But you can't get them to admit it. It's in that same way of like, what's an example? I'm trying to think of like the self-delusion of how. Have you ever had a friend who's cheating on their partner, and the Well, your friend, have you ever had a friend who's cheating on their partner, and the level of excuse they're telling themselves about while they're doing it? You know, actually, it's it's for the relationship. Is by I like again.
Mwah, mwah. Yeah, God, yeah.
Go ahead. Explain this one to me. I had that said to me by the ones because I had a couple that were I was friends with both of them separately, and then they got together, and then they were cheating on each other. And what was interesting is they both were cheating on each other and both saying they're doing it to save the relationship, which is weird that they were there in their dysfunction. They actually had something in common.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny that they were both cheating because it's even worse when it's one of them and it's just, and you're just like, well, I'm loyal to both because you're both my friends, but I now feel, now I'm trapped in the middle of this bullshit that is going on. And what do I now? I'm furnished with this information that I didn't need.
I do not. Stand up. It's really gone now. The generation, especially in Canada, like the old guys when I was an opener and they were the headliners, sort of like two generations above me, loved cheating on their wives. And I very quickly just started being like, because here's the thing, I don't have a good memory. Like, I don't have a good short term memory. So I would forget. And then meet people's wives and be like, oh, did I meet you? And then they'd be like, what the fuck? And I'd be like, why am I in charge of your bullshit? So I now just have a blanket policy, which is I am not protecting you. And like people have gotten pissed off. And I'm like, I don't have the time. Also, like, I'm not doing this. I also don't get to jizz near a stranger. You're getting all the benefits of this. You know what I'm saying? I'm not. But it's that same level of self-delusion the Americans have towards guns. So they never think of them as like, I have this on me for protection. They're like, just in case something pops off. And it's like, this is popping up. That's a fist fight.
Yeah.
And then, not that though. Like, it's weird. Their relationship with it in the way that I think if Britain had that level of guns, everyone would be strapped. And like, I guarantee there would be a lot of arrests because people brandished it, but I don't think a lot of people would shoot. You would be the tube would constantly be delayed because someone just, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Would just like throw it around, but wouldn't, I guarantee no one would be shot, but they would be constantly like, whoa, you know what I mean? Like, that's what it would be, I think. Like, because if you look at the level of guns that are in America, this is a shock. Like, it's between two, like, something staggering, like 20 million to 100 million guns, and there's only 250 million. It might be even more than that. So it's like when they're like, well, the gun debate, it's like there's no debate. You're never going to get those guns back. We just have to live with this and change the entire society. We need to figure out a way to stop making it seem like a way to get attention is to walk into a school with an automatic rifle.
Yeah, that's what you need to change. Absolutely. But you see these people, like you just said, with the, it's almost pornographic. Some of it, you see the pictures of people that are in open carry states. And there was one guy, you could just tell by the way he was dressed that he was like, this is his every day. He straps his anti-tank missile firing fucking bazookas to his back. He's got two either side. He's got bullet belts. He's got the Oakley sunglasses and the fucking hat and he's stacked as well. He's built. So he's like, yo, I'm ready, man. I'm fucking ready. And you're like, ready for what? Ready for what?
Also, what I also think is so fascinating is all these guys are like super duper fucking strapped, but it's like, well, I have a gun in case something happens. And I'm like, what about the military? And they're like, well, I don't know if maybe they're going to be the one. I'm like, again, if the U.S. military turns against its people, you've lost. Like, I'm sorry. Like, what are you going to fucking do? Like, well, what are they going to do? Show up? And they're like, they're not going to show up. They'll use missiles. Like,
you'll just vanish.
It's the U.S. military, motherfucker. They fought terror. Like, do you think that they have a problem fighting a guy?
Brad?
Yeah, exactly. They took on a concept. They can take on a man. No, it's I got to tell you, but for all of that, like, the level of open disparity between wealth and poor that's in this country is so brutal. There's so many negatives to it. That said, still better than England, and here's why. There is an honesty to America, and there is also a we can try and do better. As much as it's fucking tough to get them off their ass and for them to see that there's a problem, once they see it, they will try and change and adjust. There is a level in like, this sounds really fucking hokey and hippy dippy bullshit, but like, there's a people's spirit here is still like, it's not broken in a way that you think it is. And England post Brexit, Rich, is just, you go to some places and people's spirits are like just a bag of broken Christmas ornaments. Like, they're just like, well,
yeah,
I eat this because it hurts and I want to feel pain. And he was like, fuck, like let's all get out of Lancaster. You know what I mean? Like, just
here. England is like an old shopping mall that used to be like, it was the, everyone went, this is the biggest shopping mall in the world. It's got this store, it's got that store, it's got everything you'll ever need.
Tier one imports, a movie theater, the Gap. Like, it's got all of the shops.
It's got it all. And now it's like 30 years later and it's just, there's like Taco Bell wrappers rolling around in the wind.
It's exactly what it is. And what's even weirder is it was like the mall voted in to bring Amazon. Like, it's like Brexit. The mall was doing just fine. Didn't need anything else. And then in 2016, they were like, you know what would help this? Amazon. And then there was a giant campaign being like, in fact, there is no way that Amazon helps us whatsoever. And then they were like, we're going to bring in Amazon and start causing all these problems and not acknowledge it until...
Yeah.
6 years late. 6 years, Rich. It's been 6 years since I saw a Nazi flag hanging out of a balcony. And a guy yelling, just pointing at people and yelling, go home. And I'll never, that and Brexit, the two memories I have of Brexit, seeing that like a week later, and then the day of Brexit, walking through Hyde Park, and a man in the nicest suit weeping on a bench. And I did the math on the time. I was like, oh, that guy just came out of one of the banks and was looking at the pound going to zero. And then Mark Carney saying it. Like, it was, isn't that crazy that we lived through that? I think about that in that, like, because we were products of the 90s, which was this whole time, quote unquote, the end of history, because we defeated the Russians and stuff like that. And then it's sort of like in the 2010s, like, events were kind of like, all right, Let's put on a show for these humans. And then we got Brexit, we got Trump, all of the ensuing things that came after that.
Banks,
like,
collapsed. Yeah.
Banks collapsed. We always forget about the lovely bank collapse of 2008. That was always a wild time. Do these external stressors, do they affect you, Rich? Are you seem like they roll off. You strike me as the kind of guy that they roll off the back. You know what I mean? Like, you've got bigger fish to fry. You know what I mean?
I think it used to bother me a lot. I remember exactly where I was stood in around about 2008. And I remember being stood in my bedroom at the time. And I was with my now ex-partner, Marilyn, who you would have met. I think you know Marilyn. Her and I were talking. We were watching the television in the bedroom. And I remember and they were talking about people were borrowing money but not paying it back. And they were doing this and that. And the banks were just, everything was chaos. And I remember saying, this is fucked. This isn't going to last. Shit's going to happen. And then it fucking did. And I was like, holy shit. Because you're like, if people are taking the money, but they're not giving it back, and the bankers are doing whatever they're doing with the money, and it's going over here, and you go, like, well, it's not, if it's not going back in the hole's going to get bigger, and now it's just going to get fucked. And I think from that moment on, I suddenly realized I personally, on my own, cannot do anything about it. So all these big things now, like, you know, there's earthquakes and there's people trying to get from war-torn countries. And it's like, I can't personally do anything. I can send money. I can send clothing to people. I can do what I can, but I can't. It's the generals on the hill that have set all this in motion. And they just sit there eating, like they're sitting there with they've got their tent on the hill, and they've got this massive banquet. They're eating food, and they're just going, while the rest of us like get pushed off into war and doing everything. While they're just like, yeah, send more men. Don't even look. They don't even turn around. They go, yeah, send more men. They just drink more wine and they eat more food. And while we're just getting munched and plowed to death downstairs, and it's their fault, and we can't change that. We have to change them, but they're now bringing in laws where we can't even change the generals on the hill. Like, it's getting to the point now. I think I've just, in the end, I've gone, I don't have the headspace for all of it. I just need to take care of what's around me and who's around me and do it that way, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's also, it can be, for me, I did find at times it becomes a burden because there isn't any actual change you can affect in the moment. Do you know what I'm saying?
No.
And I think also we also get into this point. We've gotten to this point now with sort of big issues and stuff like that, where they come out in a certain segment of society, especially if you're show business or show business adjacent, immediately rushes towards it and kind of starts using it as part of an identity. Another part immediately fights against it. And it becomes this sort of rote, like, system of, I know exactly how this is going to go before I even like open social media. And I hate that in one stance because it just, it's so self-serving, but I like it in another way in that it kind of, it's like, stop me listening to other people's opinions. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I like completely don't use social media as a news source anymore, because I'm like, I don't need to hear why the earthquakes in Turkey are somehow part of the fucking culture war, which is like, yeah, just all fake, guys. Like, what are you talking about? Like, none of this matters. Like, what's, and it gets so performative. So I was in LA for the weekend when the cops killed George Floyd, and then when people started to have protests about it, they tried to put them down with force. And literally, like, we're talking riots on either side of my apartment building, military helicopters in the sky, every police officer in the city was activated. And I can't describe to you the weird noise of every police siren in a city going off at the same time. You're just like, you're like, hell, what's that sound like? And it's like, it doesn't, you don't sound comfortable. All of that was happening. I got some emails from people saying that I wasn't protesting enough. And it was like, and one of them, I just know one of them was literally at a farm that their family owns. And I was like, I can't protest. I have a green card in the US. If the cops grab me, which they are grabbing people and just arresting them, I get deported in the middle of COVID. I can't do that. I can send money and I can send spirit and go, all that sort of stuff, but the cops aren't checking my social media. And it was just that sort of thing of like, when did we stop? In all of these sort of movements, I think we forget about each other and we forget about human beings. It just becomes us and them so quickly now. And I don't like that. I feel like we've lost a little bit of the discussion. That said, the us and them mentality starting so quickly, I think also then just, it stops me from getting engaged in any debate, because I just go, I don't think these people actually care about this situation. I think these people are looking to exploit it for emotional or professional gain.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly it. And it doesn't change anything. Like you said, it just elevates them a little and gives them some dopamine hits from doing, you know, doing, they go, oh, look at me. I got told off on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. I was talking about the strikes over here. And someone said, where are all the left-wing comedians? Where are the left-wing comedians? We've been marching for ages and all that. And I went, I don't know. Maybe drop them a line. I don't keep tabs on everybody. I'm sure. And it was that. And it was like, oh, you're just, this is you. This is your, you're just a keyboard warrior. You're just fucking gobbing off.
Also, like, here's my thing with the strikes. I completely support them. Get them for, like, by the way, it directly affects me. I travel, when I tour by train. The Edinburgh Festival this year was fucked for a variety of reasons, and one of them the train strikes contributed to. But guess what? I'm more than willing to make that sacrifice. Fucking burn, baby, burn. Fuck the Tories. Take them for everything they're worth. And by the way, that is an important, I think that, listen, I'm also not going to march with striking British rail workers, A, because I'm in California, be a bit inconvenient. But it's also like, does that actually help them if one guy shows up and I'm with you, brother? Like, you know what I mean? Where it's more that sort of thing of like, what's the public opinion? Also, I think when it comes to Britain, is it's just like, guys, stop voting for the blue one for a bit, please.
yeah. Just do that.
Like, I lived in the UK for 6 years. It was all Tory all the time, mostly Cameron with a little spice of May. And I got to tell you, when the guy who fucked a pig and the woman who looked like fucking Skeletor who talked about a field of wheat were the two reasonable ones, it's time to go. Like, that, do you know how nuts it was living in America having to explain to them the Liz Truss week? Because they don't have that system. And they were like, because America's this thing of, you, much like England and America have certain cultural things that are very similar. And the main one is, if they know you went somewhere or have done something, they think you're an expert in it. You lived in England? Yeah. That was insane. Like, that was after it was just bizarre to watch, being in Edinburgh that year, watching the bread get more expensive by the day, watching every day them talking about the cost of living crisis and the heating crisis, Liz Truss comes in, cuts taxes for a billion. Like, she was cutting taxes for a billionaires right when I landed back in the U.S. And I was like, I think I made the right call on where I live. Like, yeah, Donald Trump was a fucking near dictator, but he didn't quite get it done. And Joe Biden's kind of an old dead man who's somehow still alive, but he seems like he's, I don't know, he's passing things. Everything seems to be working. And then this, it was just like, and they were like, why did she do that? And I go, I honestly don't know. And now you got Rishi and everything seems like it's fine.
Oh, right? Man. It's just a new bonfire. It's just a new, Rishi came in and then it turned out that the one of the other ministers was diddling his tax and then decided he did that. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I made a mistake with my taxes and I forgot to declare this bit. The money that I funneled through my family's businesses and other places that looks like I was hiding it, but I wasn't. It was just traveling through. The money was resting in my account. It wasn't just, you know, it was just, it's so fucked. It's so fucked.
Here's what I do think about though. Do you know how good the bands are going to be in like 3 years? Because no time in England is better for fucking rock and roll than fucking Tories. We're going to get
I fucking said that the other day, man. Yeah.
It's going to be good. Like, we're talking like, like just speedy posh boys who are addicted to like amphetamines in Oxford in a basement are making some garage rock. I will pay to see. Oh.
There's a band called Benefits. They're from Middlesbrough.
They're from Middlesbrough. Like, oh.
Yeah. It's fucking, it's spoken word over the top of just industrial. A lot of it's, I get it. It's exactly how everybody's thought should be in this country.
Right? I'm also with you in terms of like, when people go, John, put on a band you like, I go, you're not going to like it. Like,
nah, yeah.
What were you listening to today? They're a feminist trio from Glasgow and they're called Breakfast Muff. And no, you will not enjoy the lack of hooks. No. Yeah. This guitar sounds well, guess, yeah. Thank you for noticing, and actually that's part of it. It's, oh my God, I'm listening to you guys. As soon as you said spoken word over top, I was just like, daddy's it.
It's anger. It's exactly how it should. Everybody should be thinking. And it just, first time I heard it, I was walking around Victoria Park in East London. You know, in the lockdowns had been happening. I'd just broken up with my partner, and so it was just chaos on all sides. And I just had this, I just thought, fuck it. I only have my headphones and this walk. So I used to do this walk about 3 hours from my flat, just walk around and around and around with music on. And I put Benefits on, and I just stopped in the middle of the park and just went, this is it. And it's just the guy, the lead singer, Kingsley, just screaming, where's your flag? And it's just like, it's fucking amazing with this industrial noise behind it and just carnage. And I'm going to go and see him, and I can't take anyone. No one wants to come.
Better that way. It's better, but sometimes, like, listen, I'm a big music and like odd art guy, and I also am a big believer in like, some stuff is just for you. Like, I'm really into the Grateful Dead. It's not something my girlfriend wants to know about. Not only does she not want to hear about it, like, she actively is against hearing about it. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. You should have some music and some like culture and art that everyone likes. And you have some stuff that's the close the door. Like, what are you going to do? Well, this is a 35 minute dark star and they don't even get to the lyrics. It's a lot of, and I'm going to listen to the whole thing and it's going to be amazing. Like, that sort of stuff. Just, oh my God. Benefits. Oh, I love that they're from Middlesbrough. Where did they
I'll send even, you the link?
Where did they even get an amp up there? You know what I mean? Like, that no one comprehends about Britain is, it's like when people make fun of the South in the US, like, you go to the South and it's like, yeah, there's some podunk fucking backwards people, but like, it's still gorgeous. Like, it had an economic collapse in the 1800s, but they like portray it where it's like they never really recovered. And then you get there and it's like this gorgeous, like every city is like gorgeously brick buildings and like super beautifully preserved. And then you get to Middlesbrough and you're like, did a bomb go off? And it was like,
yeah, did it?
Socially speaking, yes.
and they all voted for Brexit up there. They're all Brexit voters.
Yeah, man, I know. I was with Kai Humphries. We walked by the UKIP office in Blythe, and then we saw two guys who had just stolen a door. Like, it's just the part of that world is fucking wild. The Cockerel Twins is their name, by the way. The entire town knows them. It's their thing. They steal your door, and you have to go back and get it. As I understand the scam,
you have to go and buy it back from them.
I don't know. It wasn't implied that it was even buyback. You just have to go get it, which actually right there sounds even more. Are they northeast or northwest? I always get confused. Which
that's
one.
Northeast.
That's northeast. Yeah, northeast. Northeast isn't like that's right. Northwest is much more. They've commercialized their crime. Where I think in the northeast, stealing it for the love of the game. You know what I mean?
What do you want for the door? Well, you'll see.
You're here. Yeah, this is nothing. I wanted the thrill of stealing the door. I got a gig. This is some people play guitar. I steal people's doors. Yeah. It's fucking nuts.
I think you hit the nail on the head just now when you said that you need something for yourself. That's very important for your mental health. Whereas before, I wanted to be in a relationship where I want someone that digs the same music I do and the same fashion that I, the same clothes that I like and the same this, that, and the other. And I was always getting upset because it wasn't quite right, or I had to hide my music, or I had to do this. And it may become with age, but now I'm kind of like you've just said, I like the fact that there's some stuff that I like and not many people do. And it's just a nice little thing. And I'll just put my headphones on. You won't even know I'm listening to it. It's there.
I'm reading. I just read Hunter S. Thompson's collection of his Rolling Stone articles.
Oh, you're nice.
They were fucking great. But one of the best lines in it was he was talking about when he lost his election for sheriff in Aspen. And he talked about someone gave him a peyote button. And he just kept talking about, he like, just take this and go to the headphones. Like music, escape, escape, escape. And I really liked that as an escape hatch of like the idea of like, if you can get to the headphones, you might be able to sort this out. Like, and it's, oh, I don't know what he means, that sort of thing of like, because it's one of those things where if there's a bunch of shit and bad stuff going on, a friend of mine passed away last year and I was grieving a lot. And I found,
sorry, mate.
Thank you very much. I found getting into new bands was a nice, because it's a total, there's no obligation to it. And there's nothing, like, there's no work to it. It's just like, oh, I like this song. What's another song by, but it feels like it's a task. It feels like you've done something, but there's no sort of like, there was no job aspect of it to it for me. It just was a fun sort of hobby, and it kind of helped me get back off the couch and keep processing. That was the one thing that was very interesting, is it was kind of just putting one foot in front of the other and doing anything felt like progress, because it was just I was so sad. And I really think that doesn't get brought up enough. Is it sort of that thing of like, because listen, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably had a little bit of depression. I think that one of the things of depression that really fucking can get people is that rotating cycle of like, I didn't do anything yesterday, so I'm a piece of garbage, so I'm not going to do anything today. And it's that sort of thing of like, just turn anything you've done. It's like, well, I did that. I listened to three Grateful Dead acoustic albums for no reason. That's something. That's like, I don't know what the mandolin sounds like inside the Capitol Theater. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just find fucking anything. And I think having those things for yourself lend to that a little bit of you just go like, I found this new band today. It's also something to do on the road. You know what I mean? The amount of weird vinyl records. I don't even own a record player, but you can just kind of go in there and just look at stuff, talk to the guy, browse their t-shirt selection. You know what I mean? Find a book to later buy on Apple Books because you don't want to carry it. That sort of stuff.
Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah, like you say, you can find it's not, you don't have to get up and go to the gym if that's not your bag, but just get up and do it. Like, I listened to Jeff Buckley's Grace for the first time about a month ago. I just didn't care. I heard.
You never got broken up with in college, Rich? I guess you didn't go to college.
Yeah, I did. Not for long. I was a mature student. it just didn't speak to me. I wasn't interested. I think I'd heard something or other, and it just didn't connect at the time. So it wasn't until later on, and then I was just like, do you know what? I keep seeing all these lists of the top albums of all time, albums you should listen to. So I'm going to. So I went, all right, let's start. Jeff Buckley, Grace. Fuck me.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck me.
Real good.
It's perfect.
It's one of those, I will say, it has one flaw. I don't like the jacket cover.
No.
You want to
know?
I'll tell you why. He's too pretty. I remember looking at that and being like, I don't need this fucking pop star telling me how to cry. You know what I mean? And then you listen to it and you're like, oh, I feel like that was just a good photographer.
It's like comedians. You can't have a good looking comedian, like a good, like model-esque comedian.
I feel I need to talk to them. It's one of those things where it's like, if someone's like gorgeous, I'm like, and they're like, this person's too pretty to be a comedian. I'm like, come here. Where's your dad? You went, you mean the heroin addict? And then you're like, yeah, he's fine. It's totally good. We're good.
Like, you're fine.
Yeah, exactly. Where's my mom? You mean the person who died in the fire? Yeah. This is going to be a good dad. They're going to kill it. You know what I mean? You just need that information. I remember Brendan Birds went, why are you a comedian? And I was like, I grew up fat. And he went, there it is. That's what it is. I was like, okay. Thanks, man.
Do you know, I just said this morning on Twitter, I've just booked my accommodation for this coming weekend for gigs. £53, Friday night, Saturday night. The reviews are terrible. It's like threes and fives. It's out of 10. And I'm like, that's perfect. That's where all the good stories are. You don't get good stories from five-star hotels scooting around in your socks.
I love the Travelodge in Liverpool. I can't describe exactly, but it's like if you come out of the station and you know when you like Liverpool has all those weird like Y street like shaped streets where it's like goes on a street, goes to two other lanes that way. It's like down past one of those, and it is the absolute Scouse Chapel of Madness. Like I saw two women throw pizzas at each other in front of it. Like what are we doing?
Yeah.
Full pizzas, not full pizzas, out of the box. Fuck off, Karen! Like, talk about chaos. That city, I remember my ex-wife and I were there. I was doing gigs, and we were walking through the street, and she's Canadian. She had never seen chaos like this. And there was a drunk man trying to wake up his drunk girlfriend. She's dressed all in white. His hand is cut, and he's literally gushing blood on her white dress. My ex-wife wakes her up. She wakes up and goes, fuck you. And my ex being Canadian, not realizing, oh, now we're in a fight. So then I have to like, and then the guy starts getting a bit lippy. And I go, she was just trying to fucking help. No, she doesn't need help, man. Shut the fuck you. And then Max is like, let's go. And then it was just fucking nuts. Oh,
But that's where the best stories are. Always in, like you said, music comes from misery. When things are bad, good music comes out of it. Good stories come out of, you know, like I remember staying in Hostel Fresh in New York City.
Oh.
And I'm on, I think it was, what was it? I think it was West, I can't remember what it was, West 75 or something. What was it? West 75th or something like that. And it was, and I got there. Firstly, Hostel Fresh.
A stretch.
Fresh out of prison, but you get there, man, and it was just so. I got a separate room, so I was, you know, I was like, okay, that'll be fine. But there was always fighting. Fucking the only bit of internet was in the lobby, so you had to just sit there. Everybody else, there was a guy just sat there in his underwear, just in the lobby.
I mean, hostels. I stayed in a bunch of hostels in London when I first went over in 2011, and I think the craziest one was a guy showed up, kept screaming about how he was a chemical engineer, like. Violently drunk on rum, fell asleep, grinded his teeth all night, and I woke up and he put on a full suit, and I think he actually was an engineer, and he was just a fucking waste case.
Whoa. And
couldn't get home, so he would just crash in hostels. It was just like, whoa, I gotta remember not to buy any chemicals. Like, it's just like, jeepers creepers. That, yeah, I think a hostel is good, but also like, what, it's so fucking grimy, you know what I mean? It's just like hard place to live,
but you could, but there's some, if you were to live there, I can't imagine. That was it, you know. I've just finished reading, reread. Go on,
everyone should do it. Like, I think, like, in your 20s, fucking go live in a hostel for a bit. Like, you should have that experience in the same way that everyone work in a kitchen and work in a restaurant. Do it for 2 months. You get such an insight into humanity and to that job where you will encounter a shitty waiter and have at it, but you'll not be so worried about your side of mayonnaise.
Do you know what? It's like when you get a new pair of shoes, and when you first get them, they're a bit slippy, so you have to like you have to break them in a bit, and they have to graze the bottom a bit. You get a bit scuffed up on the soles, so they grip a bit more. I think that's the same if you go and stay in a hostel, work in a kitchen, or work at, you know, you're serving the public. That I think does scuff you up a little bit, so you've got a bit more grip when it comes to life.
100%. So my friend Matt, he was a sailor. He grew up always wanted to know how to sail. So one day he just went to Halifax in Canada, started asking around, eventually got on sailboats and learned how to sail. And he said this about travel, which he goes, I think it's important for human beings to get to a country and realize that you know no one and you need to find a place to stay and you need to figure out how to get a phone today. Yeah. And there's just something about that. But like, oh, well, I'm worried about like it clarifies the mind. And it almost is like you can be anxious and this is going to be nerve wracking. But also you got to overcome it.
Yeah.
Because you need to find a place to stay and you need to get a phone, which is something about that. That is, I think, good. It's a good challenge to have if you know you can do that. Because listen, in London, Europe especially is incredibly intimidating for North Americans because it seems like it's the same. And you realize how different culturally they are, just in certain little things in terms of manners, how things are set up, how things are done, how people treat each other, all that sort of stuff, what kindness is like. And so just having to adjust to those things, I think, are so important for your growth as a human being.
It's so true.
Soundboard. I have a soundboard over here. I didn't tell you about that.
That was excellent. But it's true. You need that. Like we stayed in a roadside hotel this weekend, just gone.
A great place. I don't smoke anymore. I for some reason, the little paddock that those have that are like right on the road, like unnecessarily close to the motorway. I always enjoyed smoking cigarettes at them.
See, the ones in America, but I think because we see them in the movies, they have a romance. They have like a gritty, grimy romance to them.
Because America, you know, will put a full restaurant. They'll put a full diner next to the highway. Like we're talking like you want like a nice Western omelet and a milkshake in the middle of a road trip. Like that's just, this is living, baby. As opposed to like a Costa machine and some sort of inexplicable cuisine that's not like, would you like some soup? Like what, how am I supposed to drive with this?
But it's that in America or in other places, it just, because here, because everybody's so tight and so worried about losing money or someone's getting more than them. And
I don't think
so things like restaurants or diners, they don't have those late at night that we do here. Like you have a diner in America that's open 24 hours a day and you go in, you go, how do you make any fucking money? You're just open all the time and there's never anyone in here.
Not everyone drinks all the time. So the thing is that some people aren't in pubs, so and they're still night people. So it's like, culturally, if you're a postman and you're going to have a beer, you just drink one in your house before you go to bed. You don't need to have a pub that's open at 7 a.m. so you can go sit in a room that's not your house and be angry. You know what I mean? So you have diners and stuff like that is the thing. But it took me forever to figure that out of like, why isn't there nighttime restaurants? And it's like, well, there are. They're called nightclubs. Like what? People don't want coffee and quiet at 2 a.m. here. They want to be ensconced in cocaine.
Then again, you know, like you said, we have to change the culture because there's nothing. I've been watching The Equalizer recently. I got obsessed with it for some reason. I kept watching the first one. I'd get it from gigs and just put it on.
As in like the Washington one where he fights the Russian mob in the hardware store.
Yeah, man. It's just that bit where he's just. That diner, man, and I just love the thought of just the middle of the night. Just I was going to go and get a coffee and a slice of pie.
I've done it. It is so fun. It was also amazing.
Fucking love that.
It's great. It's so great. Also, I write a lot in diners, and it's really really fun because the trick is, I finally looked up because I've always wanted to know like what do they not hate, and I looked up on Reddit, and they were like, well, servers don't like if you're sitting there because they're just worried they're not going to get enough tips. So I just learned like.
Right.
Say to them, listen, I'll leave you a nice tip here. Just leave the table. Or if it gets busy, tell me to fuck off and I'll fuck off. And it's great. There's a fun crackling energy to it. I also just like weird little kingdoms. I love the restaurant kingdom of you always have the server and the kitchen and there's some dynamic between them. And there's always the manager and the server and they never fucking like each other. And it's all but it's all different at the same time. I always find that very cleansing and soothing. In the same way that I love like a quiet British pub, I always love seeing that dynamic of the long-haired bartender guy and then the Eastern European slightly sort of like stout woman and whatever dynamic. And those are always, by the way, every pub in Britain has those two people and they are either fucking or they hate each other, but there's always there's a beautiful play that I just love seeing. Joshua, why have you not cleaned the bottles? You know what I mean? Just something about that. I dig it.
I love all that. But this one, I don't think the UK isn't big enough. It doesn't take you long enough to get from one end to the other. So they don't really have that kind of up all night diners next to the road kind of culture. They'll have a caravan somewhere, maybe truck stop.
Entirely. It should just be there. The UK, the amount of traffic you see at 3 a.m. could necessitate anyone doing it. It's just no one wants to open that business.
No one wants to do it. And it's a shame.
No one would choose. Like, people go, oh, there's a problem with capitalism in the society. It's like, it's actually a problem with consumerism. And we should adapt the English model, which is, yeah, that's a good idea for a business, but no one's doing it because it's inconvenient. So fuck you. Like,
I want it, but I don't want to do it. That's the British way.
There's fucking 60 million of you fucks. There's enough people to support a couple of fucking all-night roadside diners. No problem. It's just none of you do it.
Why should I do it? I should be the person owning it. I don't want to work in it.
This is exactly the mentality right here. It's like, why do I have a fucking... We need a bank loan. Why is the bank in charge of me? I don't know, because of the king? Well, fuck him too. God damn it.
This one at the weekend, it's a new services. It's on the A1M, wherever that is, near Cambridge. It's on the M11, sorry. So it's near Cambridge. It's brand new. So my beautiful wife, Kate, booked it. And she's like, look, I've got this thing. It's not the best. It's next to the side of the main road. But it's a bed. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. We're not going to be in it anyway much. So anyway, so we go up. We get there. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I know these services. This is great. The services are great. They've got decent... There's decent food in the services. We're going to be fine. It's a Ramada hotel. We're going to be fine. I walked in. Now, bear in mind, you can't get to this place without driving. We walked in. There's a guy leaning against the reception desk, hammered, fucking annihilated. All his money and cash is on the desk, and he's just standing. To the point, he's got the slow blink. He's muttering and mumbling something about asking the receptionist to have a dance with him. But she just fucking, you're just going, how did you get here?
I love it. I also just the and it's the perfect, this is the perfect detail. The have a dance.
Yeah.
It's not like he's they're paying for a room or something, although he probably is. I like that he's just like, but in the midst of everything, this employee probably wants to do the tango with me.
Yeah.
Where's that confidence any other part of your day, buddy? Like, what? That's so fucking funny. I mean, did you ever, how did it resolve?
Well, the receptionist is obviously, well, she was highly trained in this kind of combat. And she wasn't telling him to fuck off. She wasn't saying, I'm going to call somebody. She was just going, I thought we were going to have a dance in a minute. I've just got to do this. We were going to do that in a minute. Oh. And then he'd sort of mutter again and, we have a dance week. So he's forgetting all the conversations. He's like, well, I thought we were going to in a minute. It's just beautiful. It was beautiful.
So smart. So she basically just flooded the zone and... Oh, and by that he's just muttering. What I love, by the way, it's a 70-30 shot that he doesn't have a wife somewhere who is equally as drunk, just doing something else, also insane.
Yeah.
It's just why are you okay? Yeah, I guess that's okay.
Just some people. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's someone for everybody, isn't it? And there's going to be someone for this guy. Who is he is 98% fluid by this point. Like, he is,
Do you ever, I do think about sometimes how free those people are. Cause I just assume he wakes up just being like, probably didn't do anything. I'm great. I smoke too much weed by myself, wake up and can't remember specifically going to bed. And I'm like, I must have said the N-word a bunch of times. Like, I
yeah, that extreme.
Yeah, for no reason. And this guy's literally sleeping like a baby after he's just tried to force a Ramada employee to dance with him while she's trying to check you guys in. Also, can I say, who gets a hotel near Cambridge? Why wouldn't you just commute back and forth for Giggy Wiggy? So if that lovely, although you don't, oh no, you live in Brighton. No, that would be impossible. She's living in London.
So it's now, yeah. So we're Brighton. So that's now an hour and a half on your journey. So we were doing Spalding, Lincoln, and Stowmarket, and they're all kind of an hour and a bit sort of around each other. So it was just easy to come up and do that. We did the drive. So Friday, we did the drive Brighton to Lincoln and back again. And then next day we're like, fuck this. We can't do that again. That was too much. So we're like, right, let's just go get this hotel. And we got the hotel. Oh man, and I'm so glad we did. Just to see the dude. And he's just vanished as well. He's not there in the morning. He wasn't there when we came back downstairs to leave for the gig. He was gone.
Oh, I have said this before, and there's no way to develop it without violating so many people's privacy, but I would pay hundreds of dollars a month for an app where I literally just take a photo of his face and I get a little podcast of his life. That man's not true. Also, you ever walk by and you get a snapshot of a conversation and it's just like, and then she lost the cucumber in the Vaseline. And I'm like, I gotta know what the fuck happened before and after that. Like, I need to know what led up to that. Oh, like, and it hurts me that they won't tell me. You know what I mean? Like, just, and because you're just a stranger who's turned off your music and has kept your headphones on so they don't even realize you're listening in. You know what I mean?
I would like that. I just want to see where he went. Like you just said, like, what's his life the rest of the time? You know, like, so yesterday I went and saw a friend of mine and I accidentally got stoned. I don't smoke, but he was doing hits off the bong and I'm just sitting there talking to him and he kept going, I've got these drops, And I was like, oh yeah, I've had drops before. They don't do anything. So he's dropping it on my hand and I'm just there.
It's not the same anymore. THC product. THC is booze now. Yeah, it's really fucked up.
I had to go to a thing where there are industry people. And there was a couple of people that we know, friends and colleagues of ours. And I said to his girlfriend, I went, listen, I was at the bar. I went, listen, I'm really sorry if I'm being a bit weird.
I just want to say,
mashed.
It was the Chortle Awards, is by the way.
I don't want people to know I was mashed up. I was fucked, dude. I was fucked.
I mean, people have been nuts at the Chortle Awards. I've been told that people may have done acid one time, maybe.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who was involved in that. Not
you.
Not me at all. Wouldn't have ever been one of the organizers of something like that.
Dude, I was so fucked. Thing is, I wasn't fucked in the daytime. So I was set with my friend and he kept giving me it. And then I went, oh no, I'm all right. He said, what's it feel like? What do you feel like? And I was going, oh yeah, I feel great. But it wasn't working until I walked to meet my wife.
I can explain what happened. So you were eating it, and no offense, Rich, you're just a bit of an older guy, so your metabolism is probably a bit slow.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It just took you a while as you're taking like hits of tincture or whatever it was.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
To metabolize into your system, and then but once it hits, it goes into your bloodstream, so it's not like smoking it where you get an instantaneous sort of stuff. It's more just sort of like a roller coaster. and then alcohol probably, like anything else you know, it's going to double the effect of. So it's just going to pile on. Top tip, everybody, as someone, I don't really drink anymore, but I'm a big hot boy. Orange juice is your friend in all of those situations. THC.
My wife said that.
Yeah, there's something in the citrus. I don't know what it is, but it's literally like a Breaking Bad chemical thing. Like it counteracts what's making you feel woozy in a second, and it'll just snap you out of it.
Ah, my wife, last night, because I told her, and she said, okay, one, you're a fucking idiot. Yeah. Two, get some orange juice. And I kept saying, yeah, I'll get some orange juice. And then I got a couple of glasses of wine. I said, where's your orange juice? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get it in a minute.
I mean, that, but also that event is very fun. What I will enjoy about it, I don't know when it sort of this happened, because I remember going in, it was a bit of a stuffy dinner a couple of times.
Yeah.
But it has just now kind of just degenerated or evolved into kind of, there's always a bunch, like people just kind of get together and have a couple of boozes. Like people get pretty fucking mashed up. What am I talking about? Like people go for it at those awards. Holy Lord.
Yeah, they didn't last night, funnily enough. Very kind of, very subdued kind of, everyone was chatting. Wasn't as busy as it's been before. But I'm sure the next one, again, these go in cycles. So this one was probably a bit quiet. I remember last year's, we were all pretty hammered. Next year's, if everyone goes, it'll be, who knows what it'll be. But last night, Rich Wilson was fucking mash up.
Do you think you were the most messed up man who was there? Because I kept it
together.
Okay, no, let me ask you a question. Did you keep it together in the opinion of other people who live with you who were there?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Okay, all right. Yes. That's the important
situation. Yeah. I double checked. Yeah, she was annoyed, but she said, you've got to take these things seriously. I'm like, yeah, but I knew I wasn't going to win, so I don't fucking.
I also just, I don't know if you have to take them seriously. I was someone who took a lot of those things seriously for a long time. I don't know if it was necessarily the, it was the right choice for me in the moment, but I'm also like, it's just like,
yeah,
in the end, like, it's helpful and it's fun. And, you know, don't get mashed up and try and fight Steve, but like,
no, of course not.
But go have a, like, just, it is in the end, like, it is a comedy event. Like, I also occasionally, when people are like, we need to be respectful, and I'm like, well, then you've chosen the wrong people to invite, because you've literally invited the assholes. Like, there's some people who, yeah, they aim to misbehave. So I understand, watch the fuck out.
For those listening that don't know what the Chortle Awards, Chortle is a website that's run by a guy called Steve Bennett. And he reviews shows and comedy and everything else. And so once a year, there's an award ceremony and we all go. And I got nominated for Best MC.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Congratulations.
Lost out to Zoe. Thank you, mate. Lost out to Zoe Lyons, which I'm fine with. Completely fine. It was Zoe Lyons.
Did you have someone on the list that you were not okay losing to?
No, everyone was fine. Loved everybody. Everyone was great. Everyone, everyone's fine. It's all good. Do you know what, though? I knew I hadn't won.
Because I feel like he would have said, like, ah, yeah, there was one I could have. Fucking.
No, in the MC category, completely, completely fine.
Yeah, that's everyone what I'm was talking. Great. Yeah.
but I knew. So somebody announced that they'd won on social media as I'm away there. So I'm sat, I'm at the station, waiting for my wife, Kate, to come in.
Stoned.
I'm stoned. I'm just, fuck. I just glanced at my phone and it said, oh, we've won, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, it's not been announced. Oh, right. Okay, so they've let them, oh, I haven't won. Because I hadn't heard. They hadn't let you know.
They told the winners before the ceremony?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, yeah, yeah. Got it. I mean, if I'm like super stoned on like a park bench waiting for my gal to go to that, I'd be like, oh, yeah, we're not going. Like, I'd be like,
oh. Well, I just, because I said, yeah, but I was, because the other reason we went is that I want, because my wife, Kate, is a comedian as well, and I wanted her to meet some people and get her face out there. So I was like, all right, it's still worth going. We'll still go. I won't tell her. I'll tell her afterwards, you know, and it was all. Yeah.
It is a fun event, you know what I mean? You have be like two agents there from like, like a bunch of weird comedians. Like, and who was anyone like super messed up? Who would you say was the most fucked up person there? That's always a fun thing.
Nobody was.
That's really
everyone, dude. Everyone's getting straight, man. Everyone's going into non-alcoholic beers, and
I love it. I have to tell you, it's a real. I mean, I think it's just the times. It's also that thing of like, it's just times are a bit harder, and the
comedy
scene is really taking a goddamn hit. Oh, it bugs the shit out of me. It really bothers me. Just the lack of support people over there are getting from certain entities, especially when it comes to things like the Fringe, where it's just like,
oh, dude,
just throw us a fucking bone, bros.
Yeah. But again, I think it's that. It's that kind of mentality over here. It was kind of like, oh, there's nothing we could do. We've got to put the prices up. This is how much it costs now because we're blah, blah, blah. And you're like, no, I know what you're doing. You're trying to recoup money that you lost in the pandemic. and you're trying to make money on top. So you, everything's jacked up, and we just have to, and the thing is, they know that human beings are resilient, and we will find a way to make it work. And so now, so fuel prices go through the roof. We all are up in arms. Oh my God, it's too expensive. It's too much. But we figure it out and we get used to it. And then they go, oh, well, okay. Well, we knew that was going to happen anyway. So we'll just keep, you know, it will just, it will happen again and we'll get used to it and just,
I completely agree. Shit. The mentality I actually don't like is I do not appreciate the fringe society. Sort of, if you read between the lines of what they're saying, and you can also find a couple of times she's commented where it suddenly seems like it's the performer's problem that we have an issue that the fringe society just takes our money and does fuck all.
Yeah.
Like, they printed a fucking program and that is it last year. Yeah. And my resentment comes from the fact that what do you do for us that isn't being done by a venue? What, and this is the most UK story. There is no reason for us to exist. We are doing nothing to justify our existence. We will limp along for another 5 years. And then, as always happens in the UK, something will come to replace us. We will be replaced. And then we will be so confused as to what happened that we will bitch and complain and moan and claim that that other thing is evil and did something horrible to us, when in the end, it was our own fucking unwillingness to change, unwillingness to help, unwillingness to understand that people are losing. There were production companies filing for bankruptcy in the last week of the Fringe. Like, guys,
yeah,
something needs to be done. And the fact that, I don't know if this is true, but I heard, and this could be totally rumor and conjecture, but I heard via the grapevine, and this may not be true, and I will say it again, it may not be true, but I heard allegedly, supposedly, that the head of the Fringe Society said the problem is all the performers have PTSD from COVID. And as someone who has PTSD, because I nearly lost my arm in a bicycle accident, I want her to know that she can deeply fuck off and go to hell, and don't tell me what's affecting how I feel. Your job is to support the Fringe and give us things like an app that helps people go to our shows. And you couldn't even fucking do that. Like, it's just, the whole thing just drives me up the fucking wall, because I went to theater school. My entire life has been spent around art community and art funding administrators. And at this point, it's like, what are you doing and what are you helping? Fucking nothing. Get out of the way. You guys should just be like, also, you guys made millions of pounds being bailed out in the Fringe. I didn't get bailed out. I got accused of fraud by the government of the state where I live because there, because of a misfiled tax document. I'm sorry. Like, don't scream poverty at me. I figured it out. I survived. You figured it out. You survived 4 years. And no one was giving me, seven figures to run a weird shop on the fucking Royal Mile, and that's about it. Like, so it drives me insane, and I see no solution except for, I know what's going to happen is eventually it's going to die, it's going to be replaced, it's going to keep going, because that's the cycle in the UK of, you guys sort of let things decay to the point of putrescence, and then are finally like, all right, I guess we better not have a gooey body in charge, and then they go and get like just anyone, and then because things have been so bad, anything seems better, because it's just like well, it's not a decaying body, this guy gave us a carrot, like, you know, it's just like, that's not even good. And it's just fucking insane. It just drives me nuts, and I want to know if someone has on record her saying the performers have PTSD, send it to me, and then I'm going to never stop screaming about it. I will, if there is actual proof of that, never stop. I'm going to find a big giant megaphone and I'm just going to, we don't have PTSD. We just want to be treated like people who are bringing you money, because that's what we're doing. And I would just yell that at her from her, I assume, reasonably appointed home in Edinburgh. We're looking at two stories, but it's a new build.
It's true though. Edinburgh is such a fucking racket. And the only people, you're still going to go. Yeah.
This is the thing.
I'm going to be there.
I like it. I like developing an hour. I think it's my last one. I think this is finally where I'm just like, I think I have been effed over by this organization enough. This is my last one. I kind of pot committed. last year, and I feel like I want to do it, but then I don't know if I want to do this again. It just takes over your fucking year.
Dude, I'm having such a great time already not planning to do it. I'm doing it next year. This year, absolutely fucking not. I'm like, nah, I'm not doing it. I'm already working on a show, taking it to MacFest. I'm taking it everywhere else. I'm having a great time at the gigs. I'm going to have a summer in my new Brighton flat near the ocean.
Brighton summer too. You can go sit on that weird quarry you guys call a beach. Jump in the
water. Dude, you're going to sit in the quarry.
Jump in the water. I do like that.
Jump in the water.
I do like fucking Brighton. I have to say, I do think I missed a trick not living a year in Brighton or something like that. Like, I just living in London the whole time. That might not have been wise. I should have maybe done a little, maybe a year in Manchester and a little year in Brighton.
Well, yeah. Manchester's on the list as well. We're kind of like, we'll have a good time in Brighton. Then we might move out. Bristol, Brighton. We're gonna see. The world's our oyster, man.
Bristol is fucking, the thing with Bristol, it's a great place to just see a fat goth having a job. You know what I mean? You don't see anyone who looks like that in, like, just at a Tesco's, just Agamemnon, where's the hummus?
Aisle six.
Like, just
I think it's a West Country thing. So that whole Bristol down into Somerset, Devon, Cornwall seems very, there's a lot of goth. I think because there's a lot of hippy dippy stuff, like a lot of energy and, you know, that kind of crystals and magic and all that. So that kind of goes down towards Glastonbury and all the way down there. There's a rich vein of goth.
It's also a city that you can, it's a city that's going to have some weird bands that you can kind of afford. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it really, it's just, it breeds just enough subcultures. It's also that thing of Bristol is the big city to Wales. That's the thing that also I always forget. People from the Welsh Valleys are like, oh, you know, we're going to the big city. I can't do a Welsh accent, but to them, they're like, whoa, the bright lights of Bristol. Like, ooh, the tobacco factory theater. Like,
well, hello.
Ooh, a weathered spoons. Like, it's like that. I think that imbues the city with a little like a little magic in the way that Brighton has so many people that are just so happy to be living there and not London. It just feels great. Like, they're just like,
it's like being in a someone said it's like living in a festival. There's just like, there was a guy the other day, he was just playing his bongos, not even in the town center. This was in a street, just a normal street. He was a normal looking dude as well. He wasn't wearing, you know, tie dye anything. He didn't have any kind of, didn't have white dreadlocks or anything like that. He was just a guy that looked like he'd just come straight from the off license during the day. And we're just playing on these bongos on the side of this street.
This is why I love LA. Is LA is a city of individual. Everyone is living in the city they think LA is, no matter what, like, no matter where, no matter what. I saw a guy just playing, like, he was definitely on drugs, but just a guy playing a paint can in the middle of a median for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, you know, is he trying to busk? No, that's his living room, and he's playing the drums. He doesn't want your money.
Like this guy was just lost in his own bongo filled world.
Yeah, no, I'm all for just like weird grungy. Like, I am a middle class hipster douche. Like, what's my political persuasion? Anarchist. Like, it's just like I stink, but I love those kind of, like, it's just, that's exactly the town I want to live in. If I start a family, I want their first food to be sun-dried tomatoes and their first word to be actually, like, writing that down, but it's
write it down, man. That is a fucking great line.
Like, it's just like, I dig it. I dig those places. Like, it's that thing of like, I grew up in a fucking hellish weird 90s suburb, and I like grew up like, I'm getting out of this place. And how you know you're not there is if you walk down the road and someone just has a parrot. You're like, fuck yeah.
I remember years ago I was dating this girl, Michelle. She'd never really been to London, and we were going to see my cousin who lived in Kilburn. So we were going there. She's a bit worried. She's like, I'm a bit worried. I'm like, no, don't worry about it. Listen, it's not as bad as you think. It's going to be great. Don't worry about it. We parked the car. We were walking from the car to my cousin's flat, and a guy walked past us with a bunch of bananas hanging from his mouth. And I took, her eyes were on stalks, just like, you said, I'm like, listen, I didn't know we were going to see that today.
I dig it. I love, like, just, and just the little in London, especially the little moments of community, because it is a very isolating place. I remember there was this crossing right by my old house, and me and another guy, and he had like a fucking comedic amount of McDonald's in a big bag. Like, he had the one hang and like a full. And we nearly get fucking, so it was a zebra crossing, you get hit, and then what they would be speeding like fuck, and then this guy couldn't see that he was about to hit traffic, so we literally sped, nearly killed us, like felt the wind on our bodies, and then it stopped two car lengths, and the guy just looked at me, and I looked at him, and he winked, and then he ran with his full thing of McDonald's, and slammed it on the guy's windshield, took a sip of his drink, and threw it at the driver's side door.
Holy shit.
Started walking back towards the McDonald's and just kind of gave me a nod and just started. And I was like, this is why you fucking, this is London. And, and just the fact that the guy just sat in his car, that was the thing of just like, take it, bitch. Like, what are you gonna do? You got a fucking Big Mac on your fucking windshield, motherfucker? Oh. It was the best. Yeah. Oh my God. Explaining. So my neighborhood was really nice, but there was a house where they were definitely doing something very illegal. And I would know this because about once a month, you'd walk up the street and there'd be guys posted on all the corners.
Oh, yeah.
Who knew you, but you didn't really know how they knew you, because they would let you onto the street. And And I remember explaining this to a girl I was seeing, and she was like, so you'll be coming to my house. And I was like, you're fine. I'm like, it's safer. Yeah. And she's like, how is it safer? I'm going, they will never let any crime happen in that neighborhood. And she's like, what are you talking about? Going, they're doing crime there. If they're doing crime that necessitates them to have six guys on the street, trust me, like, you're not getting mugged. And if someone says a crossword to you, call the police. They're going to know before the police, and that guy is going to be in fucking trouble. Like, yeah.
I love that shit. And this is why I love, it's what keeps my love for people alive. If I listen to the politicians and all the big stories in the news, I will be fucked and I'll never leave my flat. But then people exist, like the guy with the McDonald's, the guy with the bananas, the criminal overlords that, you know what, I know what they're doing, and it's just as bad as the politicians. But you know what? I'd prefer to have them around. At least they're there. At least you can see them.
Yeah, it's also the thing of like, I've lived a lot in areas that have a lot of criminal activity, but like actual, like I don't live where there's, like I don't live in like Skid Row in LA, but I do live where like MS-13 lives in that house. Which house? Well, the one covered in graffiti with all the gang members in front of it, that one. And what you learn is the problem you're always going to have is just the fucking poor fucker who's strung out and just needs $10 for his next fix. Yeah. That's something you can't control. That's just going to be chaos. But professional criminals are actually very easy to live near, because they just want, like, leave them alone. It's not cool. Yeah. It's not interesting. It's terrible that they're doing this, but also they're not going to fucking bother you. Like,
no,
they don't need the police here. And that's just a lesson that a lot of people, I think, don't realize. Do you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people, like your friend who'd never been to Kilburn before, very interesting London experience and UK experience. Yeah. People, especially who've grown up in London, and then you say, like, oh, we're going to Camden. They're like, Camden? And you're like, what do you think is going to fucking happen in Camden? Like, but Kilburn is another one where people are like, I don't know if I want to go to Kilburn. I'm like, yeah, I don't like taking the Jubilee line anyway. But it's like, you're not going to see any fucking crime. Like, it's like when people I mean, that said, I remember once I was literally having the conversation of like, oh, you know, Brixton's changed now. And then we couldn't leave the pub for an hour because someone cut the head off of another guy down the road.
Fuck. Yeah. That's Brixton. That's proper Brixton.
I couldn't believe it, too. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, this is how the bartender said it. I'll never forget. He had a glass, like literally like the cleaning of the glass. And he just went, some poor cunt lost his head. And I went, what? And he went, yeah, someone cut his head off, and then just went back to cleaning his glass. I was like,
"Woo, Jaeger! Let's get Jaeger! Let's do something!" Yeah, oh God!
I guess I'll go do this open mic upstairs.
Ah, John,
Dangerous T is here. Rich, this was an absolute hoot. Everyone, I'm on tour right now. Please check out thejohnhastings.com/gigs for all UK tour dates. It's from the 15th all the way to the 27th. I'm going to Edinburgh, Leicester, Birmingham, Bristol, London, Milton Keynes. Be there. Be square. Eat my underwear.
Yeah, John Hastings, man. I'm glad you're not broken. I'm glad you're back to life.
This is very fun. What a wonderful way to start the day. I haven't even showered.
Beautiful. Oh, dude. Now you can go about your day. You've done a thing. Now you feel like you've achieved.
Oh, this is the thing about California, because it's always bright and sunny when you wake up. So you always immediately get like two things out of the fucking way. Bosh. And then the problem is by noon, you're kind of like, well, that's the day. And then you're like, no, there's like eight other things you need to do. What are you doing? It's noon. And you're like, well, fair.
John, it's been beautiful, man. I love talking to you. Thank you so much, man.
Such a hoot, and so nice to see producer Paul in wherever Tunbridge Wales might be located.
It's a lovely place to visit.
I never will, even though I've been there so many times. Guys, this was so fun.
Insane in the membrane.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.